This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beherenow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/beherenow.
Hi everyone, this is Chris Grosso with the Indie Spirituals Podcast on the Be Here Now Network. And I'm very excited today to have my guest Sandra Marinella with me. Sandra, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Chris. It's great to be here.
Thank you. So I just want to read your bio very quickly before we get into discussing your new book, which I'm very excited to talk to you about because I know it's going to resonate deeply for many, if not all, of our audience today. But before we get to that, Sandra Marinella has taught thousands of students and fellow educators, presented dozens of workshops at the Veterans Hospital Phoenix and the Virginia Piper Cancer Center Scottsdale, and is expanding into a variety of health and wellness settings. She lives in Phoenix, Arizona. Her website is www.storyyoutell.com. And for anyone listening or watching, that will be linked. So if you missed that, we'll have it linked right up on the page for you. Sandra, again, thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to you about this book because we were briefly speaking before the interview, and I'd mentioned I've written a couple of books myself, and it was almost haphazardly that they became books. I started writing as part of my own healing journey and sharing with various websites that accepted unsolicited material. And next thing I know, I'm being introduced to a literary agent and a book deal and then another one, and now my third book's coming out. And it's just been incredible to me that what a cathartic experience it truly has been, like sharing this story in a very candid and intimate way. So, you know, that's just a little bit about me and why I'm passionate to talk to you about your work. But I wanted to start, you know, with your book, The Story You Need to Tell. In your own words, you'd written or said that it's about digging deep and finding the stories in you that need to be explored. It's a guide to transforming your life story, which, again, I saw that and I'm like, yeah, I really resonate and understand with that. And I would love if we can start there and have you expand, you know, Why did you write this book, and how does it help us as we write transform our life stories?
Chris, in 2012, I learned I had breast cancer. Okay. And I think that's always a shock.
Of course.
And I've read a little bit about your story as well, and I know that you've had quite a story.
Sure.
So I think when we are faced with a difficult story in particular, we are forced to figure out who we are. We are forced to confront it. And I wrote the book largely because I had been a writing teacher all of my life and passionate about words and passionate about story and the power of story. I'd seen it in my classroom, my high school classrooms, and my college classrooms for decades, for three decades, actually. So that when I faced cancer, I thought, whoa. I was using my own journal to write my way through the cancer, find my words, and define my story. And in doing this, I had to ask myself, does this help other people or does it just help me?
Yeah.
And I started looking when I was recovering from one of my surgeries. I started digging through 27 of my old journals, and I realized I had used reflective writing all of my life, personal writing, all of my life in my journals to help me navigate all kinds of difficulties, not just this cancer. I had used it for my personal postpartum depression when I had my second baby. Mm. I had used the tragic death of my brother. And now I could see that I was using it to get my way, make my way through my cancer. So I thought, okay, if this is true for me, is it true for others? So I began to do research, and I discovered that here I'd been a writing teacher and seen this practice in my classroom for years, but there were studies. James Pennebaker had done study after study, and his students and other researchers across the nation had started studying the power of personal writing, and they confirmed that it's amazing what personal writing can do. So I wanted to do something with that, and as I healed, I decided the best thing to do was to take this personal writing out into the community. Yeah. And work with fellow cancer patients and work with veterans. My husband is a disabled veteran, and he was adamant. He said, this work should not only belong to those with illnesses, but you should take it definitely outside of that, to prisons, to veterans, to people who are struggling with drugs and other issues. And so I could only manage two when I was doing the research and writing the book, but I did start working at Piper Cancer Center with cancer patients. And I went downtown to the Veterans Hospital and began volunteering with just a series of veterans. And their stories were so overpowering. And watching them take the writing and use it to transform their lives, it was a gift. I mean, it was just an exciting time for me. And I very much felt, writing is not simply therapeutic, it's transformative. This is your book. You need to write, Sandra. And so that's why I wrote this.
I absolutely love that. So as I'm listening to you share that, and here's the inspiration, a question I'm often asked by aspiring writers is, you know, I have this book inside of me. What do I do next? And it can be a tricky question to answer because I am very candid myself that I didn't even finish an associate's degree in college. I did not go to school for writing. I've never taken a formal writing class. I literally, very similar to what you were saying earlier, was I started writing about experiences I had had in a way that all I wanted to do was help others to potentially avoid even one, if not all, of the pitfalls that I continued to fall into. And you know, both of my first two books are traditionally published, which is not the easiest route to go, as yours is. Self-publishing is definitely easier, and I think both routes have pros and cons. But I can imagine someone sitting here listening, you know, already thinking, okay, I do have a story to tell. I don't know what to do next, you know. And unfortunately, as we both know, when it comes to traditional publishing, there needs to be, not in all cases, but most, you know, the marketing is taken into place and social media and this and that. So I guess my question is, if I'm a listener right now who feels like they have this story that needs to be told, what would you recommend to them?
I think the place where I started, of course, was sharing my stories with my friends, with people that and that I was comfortable with, and talking. I think we all have stories, and they're not necessarily all bad stories. I mean, we obviously need our stories to define who we are, and we want to pull those out of us and make sure that they're stories that we're happy with, because we have a lot of power over story.
Yeah.
So as if I were someone starting this writing process, I would start by sharing stories with friends, by telling stories, by talking. Oftentimes writers come to me and say, I'm blocked, I can't write. And I start talking with them and asking them questions, and boom, the stories are all over the place.
Right.
So, once you start the talking, then I think it's very easy to begin the free writing. And this is where the journal comes in. In your case, you've turned, I think, more to the podcast to express yourself and to to put ideas out there and to share ideas. There's so many different ways to share our ideas now. You can do a public blog. You can do a private journal if you don't want to be public. But I would definitely turn to some form of writing and try it in some practice. I know Julia Cameron has the age-old book, The Artist's Way, that argues that 3 pages every day. You should get up and write 3 pages every day to get your writing going. And I'm definitely not one that does that. Like you, I have found my own pattern.
Right.
I really argue with every writer that I work with, you have to find your own pattern. You have to find what fits your life and will take you forward with your words. And if that's a journal, that's a great place to start. The free writing is a place to start.
Yeah.
If you need prompts, there are many great books out there with prompts.
There
I think The Story You Need to Tell provides a series of them. My goal was to be able to guide people who were out there on their own struggling and trying to figure out, how do I get through this illness or this loss or this difficult breakup in a love relationship, whatever difficulty or trauma you're experiencing, there are prompts to kind of guide you so that you can write about them and see if you're comfortable with them. But my biggest idea here would be that everybody can find a writing pattern. I'd be interested in knowing what yours is, Chris.
Well, so here's what's interesting, Sandra, is I love what you said a moment ago about, and I apologize, I forgot the woman's name, where she says, right, was it 3 pages or 3,000?
Yes, yeah. Julia Cameron's classic.
Yeah. And I've heard different suggestions from different writers, many of which I deeply respect. But what I have found is I have to be true to myself. And I liken it to, I'm a musician before a writer. I grew up, I taught myself how to play guitar, just like writing. Like I said, I've never taken a writing class. I never took a guitar lesson. I self-taught drums. So when I would start writing my own music, I would find it would either flow, and I would just be in that flow state, or it wouldn't. And I would be forcing it, and I would get frustrated, and I would just end up throwing my guitar down and walking away, huffing and puffing. And I found the same thing happened with writing for me. Either it's going to just come out naturally and flow, or it's going to be forced. And I actually was giving a talk to my old high school. I gave an all-school assembly last November, and then I was fortunate to be invited to their the literary classes that were being taught. And I'll never forget, at one point I said this. I said, I know that some teachers will say you have to write, 1,000 words a day or something, no matter what. And I say, no. I say, if you do not feel moved in your heart to write, then do not write. And I remember the laser beams from the teacher's eyes. And I said, unless you're in high school and you have a teacher you have to answer to. And in that case, you write 1,000 words a day. But so no, that's my thing, is that I can't force it. Like I see both sides of it. I understand why they say that. I could see why, being a guitarist, if they say practice for 20 minutes, these scales every day, you'll be a better guitarist. I am sure that that is true. But part of me has a hard time with that because it feels very forced and inauthentic. And so that's my end of it. I write when I feel compelled to. And there have been times literally where I will go 3 or 4 months and not write a single word. And there will be times where I will write for 3 or 4 months straight, almost without stop. So, yeah. How about yourself?
I usually go to a cafe every morning, because if I don't, I start doing the wash or the dishes,
sure.
The things that will eat the day away and take the writing right out of me. So I usually go to a cafe and I hide there for 2 or 3 hours. And I usually tackle a writing project. But when I have an issue, or when I have a topic that I think is important to explore in my life, my brother and I were having an interesting conversation when he came last week, and it was about the suffering in the world, and it was really upsetting him. And I found it very, very helpful to go into my journal and explore, my response to that. And I plan to share that with him, but I needed to wade through that in my own mind. I needed to reflect on it. And when he was shooting these hard and difficult philosophical questions at me, I had no answer. I had to think, and that's, for me, that is the amazing value in writing, is that we can take our thought processes and we can reflect, we can pull them down and we can use them. So I do probably tackle my journal one or two, sometimes three times a week for maybe 20 minutes. But if something like the discussion with my brother is powerful, I can find myself using my morning writing hour to really explore and think about that. And sometimes that'll turn into an essay.
Yeah.
But I do try every morning to start with my writing. I see myself as a writer.
Yeah.
But I, having taught thousands of students, I think the pattern is just so different for each one of us, as you right. elaborated. And the goal is to find the one that fits you.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I think that's why I do, you mentioned me doing the podcast, is I find at times I don't feel like I personally have much to say as far as writing. I'll still teach and I'll do workshops, but I am a student just as much as a teacher. When people call me a teacher, it makes me feel weird. Like, I feel like when I lead workshops, which I'm always honored to do, or I speak at festivals, and not to be cliche, because I mean this from the bottom of my heart, I will speak to people there and learn probably more from them than they did from me. So,
absolutely. That's a beautiful statement. I really like that, Chris. I'm gonna jump right in on it, because
go for it.
I always felt so honored to be a teacher, because I was really the student. really, you know, you're really there. I think if you're doing the kind of teaching you should be doing, you're learning. You're learning with your students, and you're helping them explore and open up in new ways. So. I love that you said that. I think that's very, very true, that remaining a student as much as a teacher is critical.
Yeah, it has been for me, at least, and it keeps myself in check, or helps me too. But that's why I'm so passionate about podcasts, is because this is a great chance for me to learn from you or my other guests. Like, we have a nice conversation, I share a little of my experience, but I absolutely adore learning from people whose work I respect, you know, who are out there in the world with heart, with integrity, trying to really serve humanity in a way that is going to help us heal. I mean, the subtitle of this book, when I read it right away, it touched me deeply. Writing to Heal from Trauma, Illness, or Loss. You know, aside from the work I do in my own writing and speaking, I work with a nonprofit in Connecticut called Toivo. And that's what we do, not just with writing, and we do offer writing classes, but we also go into the jail cells in the psychiatric hospitals and just a number of different facilities, as well as hold courses, always free or donation-based, to offer these modalities to people that need them, that don't have access to them. And I, you know, that's why this book deeply resonated with me, is that I feel like it's very accessible to literally anyone. You can pick this up. And it's going to, like, get you on that path. If you feel called to write to heal, here's your book. So what I guess my next question is, it's a wonderful book. Can you give an example of maybe a story you need to tell? I mean, I believe we all have one, but if you have an example, that would be wonderful.
Okay. I don't know why it keeps resonating with me that even good stories are stories we need to share and tell. I don't know why I keep needing to say that lately.
Yeah.
But I, in my writing for so long, I was so focused on very riveting, very traumatic stories.
Sure.
And those, of course, are important to tell for psychological and physical reasons. We often take difficult experiences and bury them inside, and they become unhealthy for us. So one of those stories that I saw in the course of writing this book is the story of Matthew Goldie Goldston. And he is a veteran from Afghanistan, and he had been overseas in 2009. And this was his first experience with constant firefights, living in the midst of war. And he was truly traumatized by this experience. And when I put out a call, when I started writing this book, I wrote an email to the veterans I was working with, and I said, are any of you willing to talk with me one-on-one and tell me this, you know, your stories? And so I began meeting with Goldie at I think it was in Applebee's. We began to meet about once a month and share his stories. And it was amazing the things that he had been asked to do and the things that he had experienced and the trauma that he had undergone when he was at war. And he had gone off to war. His wife had stuck this little green journal in his backpack. And she said, "You're going to need this. You don't know this, but you're going to need it." Wow. And so he took it with him. And he did do some writing. But he told me, when you're at war, you're facing things that you just don't expect. And one of his stories, is the story of his dear, dear friend, Nick Hand. Very close to Nick Hand, and one day they're in a firefight and they're warding off the Taliban, and Nick calls out his name, and Goldie turns to Nick, and of course Nick has been shot in the head and is falling into the arms of Goldie. And Goldie said, "Oh, that was the beginning. That was the beginning of my PTSD. How do you cope? How do you deal with the death right in your arms of one of your dearest friends, somebody you love? And you're supposed to buck up and take your rifle and keep fighting." So Goldie said, it was really, really tough. You were asked to buck up and bury these things inside.
Yeah.
And he did both hide it and share it. I mean, he did some journal writing, but it was very limited. It was a new experience for him. And it really wasn't until he came back to the United States, back to the base, that he began to see a psychiatrist and realize that he had stories hidden inside, stories that were hurting and that really needed to be shared and needed to come out so he could understand them and reframe them and learn a way to make this death manageable in his life. Yeah. Well, that's an example of a story. Yeah.
And so what I'm hearing as you're saying this is that a lot of people who feel like they have a story to tell, and we all do. You know, I mean, we all have our own very unique human experience. Sometimes feel like I need to tell it to the world, but maybe that's not necessarily the case. Maybe you just need to write it for yourself or for your family, or again, going back to maybe self-publish it, you know, for some friends. But I would love to hear from you, what in your experience are some of the benefits to, you know, telling our story, to writing it out, to, again, the subtitles, healing and trauma, you know, and I understand that. But, you know, when we start to really put it out in a way that's cathartic, like what are some of the benefits that we can experience or potentially will experience with that?
I think probably the catharsis is critical. I think the fact if we have a hard story, often we can't give it out for a while. I think there's the shock and the trauma and the silence, and our bodies and our minds need to adjust to this difficult thing that has happened to us. But I do think when you break your silence, and for some reason I'm thinking of Elie Wiesel. He always comes to mind because I love his book so much.
Yeah.
But the great writer Elie Wiesel said after his experience in the concentration camps that he could not write about it for at least 10 years. And it was, I think, 1960 before he began to publish his series of books on what he experienced. He was so traumatized. But when he did that, when he broke that silence, you can see the power of his words. You can see the beauty of the story he told.
Yeah.
And the message that he brought to the world, the importance of bringing that message. So I think when we share our difficult stories, we help others find their way to catharsis and resilience. Mm-hmm. But I think probably the most important thing is you get a catharsis, you break your silence, you can also begin to find meaning. And when you can begin to find meaning in a story and make sense of it and rework it in your life, you own that story. Doesn't own you anymore. It doesn't control you anymore. And you're not ruminating about it. It's not dancing around in your brain, driving you crazy. And so once you can frame it, it's not draining all that negative energy from you. And you find a peace in yourself to move forward, to charge forward. And I call that process that I seem to see over and over again in the veterans and the cancer patients that I worked with. I call that story transformation. And while there's a lot of research out there that says telling our stories does great physical things for our lives, I think the power of transforming your life with your story, of changing your life, of making it better, is to me the most important thing that can happen. Hmm.
Well, one thing I want to mention before I wanted to follow up on that, because I know you've done extensive work with veterans and cancer patients, which is obviously no small thing. One thing I did want to note is for anyone listening who is interested in writing, and you made a great suggestion earlier, you can start your own blog. There's a number of ways to do it. I just wanted to suggest a few websites to people. I'm not advocating for them over any others. They're just ones I'm familiar with. But if you visit sites like elephantjournal.com, mindbodygreen.com, yoganonymous.com, even Huffington Post, I know that one's a little bit tougher, but often people ask me, well, how did you get started? And these were the websites that I started writing for, because I felt like, yes, I wanted to write for me, but I also wanted to share and get that story out again, like I said earlier, and maybe a way that someone will read it and it'll benefit them so they don't have to suffer in the same way I did. But you were mentioning, so I just want to put that little caveat in there in case anyone's wondering of some outlets. But I would love to hear a bit more about this extensive work that you have done with veterans and cancer patients. And I mean, this is such a big question, I feel, but like, what have you learned from them and that experience of working with them so candidly?
Oh, my goodness. Very different populations, veterans and the cancer patients. I'll start with the veterans because sure. I've already heard the story of Goldie.
Yeah.
And Goldie and many of the veterans that I've worked with, I think the most powerful thing I learned is that they are so acculturated to hold their stories inside, to hold the pain inside. And they return from war. And I mean, I have worked with veterans of Vietnam and veterans of Kuwait and veterans of Afghanistan, Iraq. They all have trouble talking about their experiences and what they went through and what they've done. And often what I learned from them is the writing is such a powerful and helpful transition to put the story gently and easily out there, whether it's in a poem or in a script. And I'm a big advocate of that. I don't think it has to be just free writing in a journal.
Sure.
Free writing in a blog. If you're interested in writing a play, if your experiences, come to you in that form, then I say share it that way. I mean, put it out there in the way that works for you. Once again, I think we have a kindred spirit here in believing that the individual kind of has to find their way of finding their words.
Right.
So I was really shocked, and a couple of the veterans that I worked with told me they had actively thought about suicide. And of course, I did some research for my book and found out there's 18 to 22 veteran suicides per day. And help they know, they have been acculturated to hold this stuff in. And we have to break that cycle. Really do. I hope that the book will resonate with veterans for that reason, because it's certainly a guide to help that process change.
Sure.
Now, cancer patients, I would love to tell you just a little bit about a personal story with one kid. Would that be okay?
You don't have to ask. I would love to hear it.
Okay. When I started this journey, my surgeon said to me, Sandra, I would love for you to work with Jennifer Compassano because she's 32 and she has stage 4 cancer. She probably does not have long to live. She just had a baby and she would very much like to leave her story for those people she loves. And so I began working with Jen, writing her story, working to tell her story. And she was already immersed in the power of words. She already understood that she was possibly facing death and that she wanted to share her story. So she had started a very public blog partly because people were asking her all the time about her current situation, and she couldn't return all these phone calls, and also because she just felt it might help other people in the same circumstance. So she started this blog that really resonated with the community, and I followed her blog and I worked with her, and we began this long journey of 3 years together, going to chemo every third week. And she had reoccurrences and drug problems, and the struggle went on and on and on. But Jen has survived her cancer. And I look at her and I am amazed. And I still meet with her frequently. We still talk, but she's no longer in chemo. And we don't know, her cancer could come back, but she seems healthy. And the thing I learned from her is I would sit in chemo and I would say, Jen, how are you doing this? And she would talk to me all the time about, this cancer does not own me. I have it. It doesn't own me. I own it. And she navigated this very difficult journey with such beauty and with such positive words and such upbeat attitude, always hanging on to the things she loved, her family, her friends, her writing. She's finished a book on her cancer journey. And just the power, I think I learned from her that you can be in the middle of this life storm, this tornado, and you can choose to step into the middle and really live fully.
Yeah.
Because she did that. And I can't tell you how many days I wake up and think, I'm going to be just like Jen today. I'm going to live in the middle of the tornado and find the peace.
That's incredibly beautiful. And I say that because it makes me think of, well, I know a number of breast cancer survivors, you know, thank God. And one of them is a dear friend of mine. Her name is Kate Bartolotta. And I remember she had written about her experience, and what she wrote has forever changed the way I experience illness in my life. And I've been going through some personal stuff myself that I'm not going to get into today because I literally just found out this week. But I will tell you what she said about her cancer is that, you know, most people, there's the F cancer stickers and, you know, all this angst against cancer. And I get that. It takes our loved ones, and it's tragic and horrible. But she made the decision that I'm going to love my cancer because it is a part of who I am, and I'm going to hold it in that reverence and that respect that I would hold any other part of myself. And I just remember reading that, and I teared up. I'm like, that is such a beautiful sentiment and statement.
You know, Jen said to me at one point that she went to a support group, and she said, it became very clear to her that there were those people who were determined to survive cancer and were talking positively, you know, telling stories of how we're going to live and what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And then there was the other group that just said, when I die, all the time. And she said it was so shocking to her that people would choose to view their cancer as something that owned them and would take them away no matter what. And I really think that that was profound for me, as your friend's writing was for you, because I thought we do have control over how we look at things, how we interpret things, and we should seize that. And I'm grateful, really grateful, to have worked with cancer patients for that reason. They've taught me a lot about that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, the line of work I do, not so much with cancer patients, but going into hospitals and detoxes and seeing youth 13 to 18 who have already tried to commit suicide, you know, you see this and it's just, yeah, wow. Yeah, it can be such a valuable learning lesson still in my own life, you know, having gone through everything I have. I go there to try to serve them, but I leave realizing they serve me far more than anything I could have offered them. Though it's always nice when I get that email a month or two later when they've gotten out, hey, I'm doing really great. Mm-hmm. Something you said meant a lot and this and that. It's like, wow. And it reminds me, you know, because the work we do, it's not easy. Not that we're, you know, martyrs or heroes. It's just we're doing what our hearts have called us to do. And oftentimes that's very difficult. And so something actually I wanted to ask you about is something I talk about. You know, I teach many practices in my workshops and different ways of working with our pain and our suffering. And sometimes I've been asked, you know, is there a point where the pain can be too much to work with in the moment? You know, because I offer these practices of holding it like a mother would a newborn baby, or, you know, that's one of my favorites. But, you know, my answer every time has been absolutely. I do believe there are certain times in life where the most compassionate thing we can do, which is counterintuitive to what most of us have been taught on the spiritual path, is instead of leaning into that pain, allowing ourselves to walk away and put some space between it. Whether that means turning on a comedy, going for a walk, getting ice cream, turning on one of your favorite songs really loud. To me, those can be much more compassionate acts than sitting with it in that moment. So that's just my two cents, you know, and I say that to say, yes, come back to it when the space is, you know, been there and it's settled. But I do believe sometimes it can be too much. So do you feel like there are times where it can be too much for a person to not write in order to heal? Are there certain scenarios where you think maybe they should take a little space or time?
Oh, absolutely. I think, as I said earlier, I think the first stage in our shock is it's trauma. I mean, we're just traumatized. And yeah. I think our brain is perplexed and confused and having to absorb something that we don't want to absorb. And I think it's very unhealthy to sit down and write at that point.
Sure.
I think you need the space. I think there's so much research now that shows that silence and quiet will help our brains regenerate and find where we're at and allow in the pain and there's going to be, with shock and trauma, there's going to be suffering. I mean, there's no getting around it.
Right.
There's going to be a period of time when you need to go through that. And I have come to believe from personal experiences, I think one of the first ones was a student that I had who was working at a Walmart on a Sunday afternoon, and he went out with the security guard. The security guard sort of haphazardly asked him to go out and chase down a man that had taken a television from the store. So they followed this thief until he's parked in a parking lot of a church, and he jumped out of his car and took a gun and shot them both in the head and killed them instantly. So my student died. And the next day we came back to school and we were all just shocked. I mean, this was one of those kids that everybody in the school knew and loved.
Sure.
He was not an A student, that kind of a kid, just spunky, fun, lovable, bright kid that you wanted in your classroom because he was a spark plug.
Yeah.
A charmer. But we were all really, really upset, and there's no way I could have asked my students to write about that. They needed space and time. I mean, we just backed away. We inched forward very slowly with that situation, and I bet it was at least 2 weeks before, after a service at the school, that we actually, you know, began gently to talk and write about this thing. But clearly, I think you're right. I think some of the most important things we can realize as instructors and teachers of writing is that there are points when you should not write. Mm-hmm. You absolutely should not write if you're not ready for that. The breaking of the silence is important, and even that will be painful.
Yeah.
But yes, I'm with you totally on that one, Chris.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, it's because again, I know it's a common sentiment that, you know, no matter what of great wisdom tradition it is, it could be Buddhism, Hinduism, Christianity, like you feel the pain, and you know, and I agree with that for the most part, because you know, we start to suppress things, and that's what creates the shadow material, this repression, and then we need to re-own this stuff, and that becomes a whole vicious cycle.
Sure.
But yes. Again, there are certain times where, like, I think of, I'm in Connecticut, and Sandy Hook's not that far from me, and you know, when that tragedy happened, I couldn't imagine trying to tell someone, write about this, you know, a week later. Like, I couldn't even imagine that.
No.
You need time to process, and I often will try to bring levity and say, like, there's no trophies given out for spiritual warriorship, you know, so you're not here to prove anything to anyone. You're here to do the best you can each day, right? And today might be a little better than yesterday. Tomorrow might be a little worse than today. But as long as you're trying and putting forth the effort, what more can you ask for, you know? So, so there's something else I wanted to ask you about, because this is something I get asked often. And I found myself answering it in numerous ways. But what do you say to someone who doesn't like to write but feels like they need to tell their story? And I am very curious about this, because, like I said, I've gone a number of different ways in my answer with this. So what are your two cents on the topic?
I think it's okay to tell your story. I think a lot of the properties of healing that come from writing can come from sharing stories as well. And the way I handled it with my father, my father died a couple of years ago, and I was busy. I was engaged in writing this book and doing the research, and he had had several falls and was struggling. And I encouraged him. I said, "Hey, do you want to try the writing?" And he's like, "Oh, no, I don't write. No way, I'm not writing." Right. And so I suggested maybe that I come in and write the stories for him. And he said, "Well, I could tape some of the stories," which he did. So we taped some of the stories, and then we found it was more fun if I came in and I wrote some of his stories. And then, ironically, after I wrote a few of them and he read them, he decided he was going to start writing them. So I think it inspired him, because maybe he thought I was messing his personal stories up. I don't know.
Sure.
Him to take off. But I think we can always tell other people. We can share it in support groups. We can share it with family and friends. We can tape what we've done. I work with one man who has MS, and he no longer can write, but he works through, he really wants to tell his story, a beautiful, beautiful story. He was a professor at Arizona State, and now he's losing his facilities. So he's begun to write his story by speaking his story and having it transcribed for him. Wow. So there's different ways of managing this. And I, again, believe it depends on the individual and what they're comfortable with. I always want to make people comfortable with their words, not uncomfortable with their words.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. That's really well said. The answer I've come to, and it's just become my go-to, is if it's meant to be written, there's nothing that's going to stop it from being written, yourself included. You're not going to be able to get in your own way. I truly do believe, and it might sound cliche, but if the quote-unquote universe, or whatever you want to call it, needs that story to be put out there, even if it's just to 5, 10, 15, 20 people, or 5, 10, 15, 20,000, it's going to happen. And so I guess it's part of my punk rock roots that I tell them, if you're going to do it, you throw all caution to the wind. You write for yourself, yourself only, no audience. Don't filter yourself. You write and write and write like today was your last day on earth. You write like you needed to get it all out today. And that seems to work for some people. Others, no, but that's...
I like it. I like it a lot. And it strikes a chord, because I'm thinking, as you talked about your punk roots.
Punk rockers, yeah.
Yeah, that we put those stories out there in different ways.
Yes.
Yeah. We can put our punk rock out in story form, or we can paint, or we can... Yes. There's so many different modes and ways. Yes. I have never forgotten when I was in my 20s, I had a friend who dragged me to a retrospective of Picasso's artwork.
Cool.
And I was not into it at all.
Yeah.
But by the time I walked out of the retrospective, I was like, whoa. I was amazed at how he told his story in his paintings, but he also scribbled little things on napkins and brochures. And that, of course, because he's famous, they kept them all. But I thought, there's so many different avenues for somehow slipping your story into the universe. Mm.
Such a great point. And thank you for saying that, because I actually don't say that enough. Even being a musician myself, I don't have the artistic skill, but I write music all the time. And thank you. What a great point. It doesn't just have to, you know, you can write in various ways.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Beautifully said. Well, so the one thing I wanted to wrap up with, first of all, well, two questions. First is, what is the biggest takeaway that you hope people, you know, who read this book discover in their own lives? You know, what would you like, you know, what's your vision for them, at least your hope for them after reading this?
Wow. I think story is so magical. Story is who we are. We are composed of stories. We're made up of stories. And I fully think, doing the research for this, the neuroscience tells us that we not only are defined by stories, but we have the power to transform our stories, to change our life story, to make it a better story. And I really, that's the biggest takeaway for me, understanding that, yes, we will have pain. We will have struggles. I mean, we all will do things that we're not proud of, or something will happen to us that will, you know, shatter some piece of our life.
Of course.
And we can come to an understanding of how to let the silence heal it, and then how to break our silence, and then how to accept our story and give it meaning and refuse it, reframe it in our lives so that we can move forward in really positive ways. For example, my own cancer, the fact that I was able to write about it, I never planned to publish a book on it.
Sure.
I planned to write a story about other people's struggles. And then my writing group said, wait a minute, where's your story? And I framed, went back and put my story in the book, and the transformation was amazing. It was so helpful to take a story I couldn't even talk about when I first experienced it. And you were indicating earlier in your own life, there's things going on, I'm not ready to talk about it yet.
Right.
And we constantly have that. Well, it was a long time before I could talk about my cancer. But now the transformation has been, I talked about it, and it's a story I've given out. And that's just so liberating. And it allows us so much personal growth that I would really hope that people who read the book would discover that power of story transformation.
Well, I can't recommend it enough. The name of the book is The Story You Need to Tell, Writing to Heal from Trauma, Illness, or Loss by Sandra Marinella. And Sandra, the last thing I want to ask is if you could just, I know we talked about it earlier, but if you can tell people where they can find you online, they can learn more about you and your work, or if you have any speaking events coming up, I would love to share where we can just find more about Sandra.
Would be great. Yes, my website is www.storyyoutell.com, and that has a list of all my events. I do a lot of work at Mayo Clinic here in Phoenix right now.
Great.
I'm doing a lot of workshops through Changing Hands Bookstore. Mm. I love the work, and I'm so glad that you are doing the same kind of work. Really, you are. We share that. It's powerful.
Yeah.
It's powerful stuff. We need a revolution here.
And isn't that all we're working on? And that's why I love, like, I have these guests on, and at face value, you and I might look completely different. You know, here I'm all tattooed and whatever. But our hearts are in the same exact space, right, and we're trying to help and serve in the same ways. And at the end of the day, what matters more than that? To me, nothing. So that's why I'm honored to have had you as a guest on the show. I am so supportive of the work you're doing. I'm so glad that New World Library published this book. They're, you know, one of my favorite publishers. I'm sure it's an honor for you to be with them. And right?
I am honored to work with New World Library.
Yeah, yeah, they're pretty amazing. All right, well, Sandra, thank you for your time. Thank you for your service in the world. And thank you for sharing the space with me. And I'm excited to share it with our viewers and listeners.
And I thank you, Chris. I love your work, and it's been an honor to talk with you.
Very, very much vice versa. Thank you very much.
Take care.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beherenow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/beherenow.